First, a little bit of product information. Now, the truth is, I don't want to spend much time on it. As is Hashem, Rav Moshe Elephant from the OU will be a Sunday night, so we can hear all we want from one of the foremost experts in the field of kashrus about everything to do with the products that are out there that's relevant to us. But a few questions that I'm always asked, the vintage seltzer is with the triangle, okay, is kosher or Pesach. It's been checked out in the source of the flavorings that are vintage seltzer. It says kosher or Pesach. You can use it's kosher or Pesach. I don't know if it has to. I'm not sure. I think it usually does have a P on it. If it doesn't, what? That I don't know the answer to that question. The ones with the P are definitely kosher, that I could tell you. And the OU's flavor are using the same flavors as they are. They come from the same. This, the flavoring is in the same. The OU's seltzer is in the same source. What else? The sun-made raisins are kosher with the heck with the triangle K are acceptable for Pesach. The sun-sweet prunes with the triangle K are kosher for Pesach. Iceberg lettuce, you have to be careful if you buy it in packages to make sure that it has hashgacha. There's been an unusual amount of infestation in this present season on it. And the Star K has often withheld its hashgacha unusually. I spoke to someone in the Star K today. He told me he does not remember the last time this ever happened. Than an iceberg lettuce. Iceberg lettuce was usually a very, very easy thing to give hashgacha on, and it's at the present time it's quite troublesome, so make sure that it actually has hashgacha on it before you buy it and use it. Also, I think there are product information things that we need to be aware of at the moment off the top of my head from today's research. Now, before we begin this, let's begin the show with the good news. You know, Pesach is always a lot of hard work, and maybe that's good news too. Nothing in life ever went bad with hard work. But if the halacha allows us to do things and make things a little bit easier for ourselves, that's also fun. And you know that I've long said that I have a proposal, and one day I'm going to work on it. I haven't had a chance to work on it yet. And I'm going to start a movement, now that they have the internet, I'm going to start a blog maybe, a website, for the National Jewish Spring Cleaning Day on May 15th, you know? But it has nothing to do with Pesach, please. Let's leave, you know? Cleanliness is one thing and the religion is another thing. You know, yeah, we do like things to be clean, that's true. But let's not, you know, conflate them with Pesach. Pesach has enough of its own troubles without that. And so I want to share part of the good news with you. And this is a good time to know this. In the writings of Rabbi Yoshev, he wrote the following, that if you have either a Jewish, a from Jewish cleaning lady, or you have a non-Jewish cleaning lady, and you oversee what she's doing, so the areas that she cleans before Pesach, and you've overseen, and you're sure afterwards, you don't have little children running around the house, that nobody brings chametz in them, there's no chiyuv to do bedikas chametz in those places at all. Those are considered guarantee that they're clear of chametz, and there's no obligation to do bedikas chametz. Now, this is a very, very important halacha, because we, especially living in a city like New York, we don't have a lot of space relative to the way we live and the things we own. And it's whatever how much space we have usually in this city, it's crowded. And when it's crowded, it's very, very hard to go around. You know, when I was first married, I lived in a two-bedroom apartment on Metropolitan Avenue in Kew Gardens, before that in Forest Hills. So the night of Bedikas Chametz, you know, it was very easy. I went around the house, and I literally checked the entire house from stem to stern. And I didn't own all that much. I was just married a year or two. And the apartment wasn't so big, so it was a relatively easy task. With the way we tend to live in this city, you know, if you had massive amount of space, you know, if we had five times the amount of space, it would probably be pretty easy to do Bedikas Chametz. Because nothing would be crowded. You just go around and everything would be loose and visible. But things are tight in this city. And consequently, to do everything on the night of the Bedikas Chametz, really to do a full-scale Bedika, is well nigh impossible. He's not the first one, really, that suggested this type of approach, Rabbi Yoshev, but it's important to know that in the Godel of our time, in fact, this was his particular approach. And I think this can help to rein it in, to make things a little bit livable. Now, in terms of the cleaning, I can't reiterate this enough. As I say, I don't paskin shaylas for tzaddikim. I'm not a roi l'kach. I don't understand tzaddikim. I'm not a tzaddik, so I can't paskin shaylas for tzaddikim. I only undertake the paskin shaylas for regular Jews. So I figure, listen, I have some insight to that. I also live in this world, so I have some idea what regular people are about. And as I said, I don't want to disabuse anyone of their chumras. The chumras in Pesach are legion, and the Rosh in Masechet Pesachim notes the fact that the women of his time used to scrub the walls. And even something as strange as that, he found some way out basis for it in a Yerushalmi to justify it. So as I say, I'm not out to disabuse anyone of the chumras, but we do know, need to know what's a din, and we do know, need to know what's a chumra. And Rav Sharmberg Zatzal, he was very, very emphatic on this point. He said, when all the dust settles and we actually get the yontif, there is a mitzvah that we have to be mekayim, and that mitzvah is v'samachta b'chagecha. And if we manage to super stress our nerves, you know, for 2 weeks getting up to Pesach, he says, then good luck in fulfilling v'samachta b'chagecha, a mitzvah d'oraisa. So consequently, you know, there's little in this world that comes for free. Everything has a price tag to it. And we have to know if we're ready to pay the price tag, we're willing to pay the price tag, and we should be paying that price tag. So that's what I said before. To go over the top, you know, this is not the time for spring cleaning, number one. Number two, one of the things which, as I said, it escapes me. There's probably some basis for it somewhere, but al pitzara din is certainly, it's certainly not necessary to do so. All the things that we're putting away, and we're selling, all the chametz to kekelim that we're putting away, I don't know why in the world we're concerned about how clean or how dirty they are. I don't care how many breadcrumbs there are on the toaster. What's it my concern? I'm not using it on Pesach. I'm not taking it out on Pesach. If there's some chametz in there, I sold it to a non-Jew. I did bittul chametz. I certainly am not going to come after Pesach and shake out the crumbs out of the toaster and use them for something. So why in the world I should be concerned with this escapes me. Totally escapes me. Now, if we stop doing the things we don't need to do, and just stuck to the things we need to do, there's plenty enough to do of the things we have to do. But the things we don't need to do, why in the world we want to undertake them, escapes me. As I said, I can't figure it out. As I said, if someone has just pure extra time, everything is ready for Yontif, you walk into the house 5 days before Yontif and the table is set for the Seder and the food is cooked and their feet are up and they're reading a magazine and they decide they want to do some chumrah, you know, listen, it's their choice, but you know. I don't know too many people that live like that. I guess the truth is I have to go see one of my Yekusha friends. I have a Yekusha friend, I have to tell you. His life is so masudr, you think it doesn't exist almost. When I was in yeshiva, I teased him. So the mashgiach in yeshiva used to make a little mark in the book if you were late or you were absent. So it came Pesach time, and his name looked like a Talmud that never came to yeshiva. There was not one mark in the entire roll books. Now, you have to realize yeshiva has minyan every day. It's first Seder, second Seder, third Seder. So there's about five times a day you could get a mark in the book. Now, could you imagine that 7, 8, 9 months of the year in yeshiva went by and there was not even one mark in the book that he was ever late or absent for a Seder? It never happened. You know, such a guy like that could be. He's ready 5 days before Yontif too. You know, I once stood inside the doors of the Beis Medrash and Mincha and Chofetz Chaim was exactly at Hadlokas Neiros. So it was put on the sign, Mincha's 4:10. And it's 4:11 and I'm standing at the door. And we hadn't started Mincha yet. And he walks in and I say to him, my dear friend, he says, you're late. I says, Mincha's 4:10 today, you're here 4:11. He doesn't even bat an eyelash and he tells me, it's impossible, I am not late. And he was right. The Gaba made a mistake. Lech Bench was 4:11. It's beyond, you know. So such a guy maybe, and you know, I have to go to his house sometime 5 days before Yontem and see what it looks like. But for the rest of us, we don't need any extra things. Just to do the things we need to do is plenty enough to keep us busy. So let's stick to the things we need to do and stay out of the things we don't need to do. And we may even succeed in getting to Yontem with our nerves only half frazzled instead of totally frazzled. Not a bad idea. Now, I do want to touch on one idea which I believe is central to understanding this chag. Before we go into the varied halachas of how to kasha for the chag, how to prepare for the chag, what is the essence of this chag? And the Torah writes in the beginning of Parshas Bo, Nemanti Saper, Bo Ozne Bincho, Ben Bincho, Isa Shavas Alalti, Mitzrayim, that you should relate to your children and the grandchildren of future generations, Isa Shavas Alalti, Mitzrayim, as I have almost played with Mitzrayim, as I afflicted them. And you shall know Ki Ani Hashem. We look at Pesach, and that's part of the story, we're right, but we don't close the cycle, we don't reach all the way to where we're supposed to go. Pesach, we celebrate the tremendous miracles that took place. The Rabbeinu Shalom had 10 makas that he did. The Rabbeinu Shalom split the Yam Suf. Tremendous miracles took place. And this took place in plain sight. Moshe Rabbeinu came, he showed up on the stage, and he told Paro, this and this is going to happen, this is when it's going to start, this is when it's going to end. And he even plays, there's a little game that he plays with Paro. He tells him, the Mosei Atir Lecho, you tell me when you want the Machir to stop. And Paro, in fact, one time tells him, Mocho, tomorrow. What do you tell him, Mocho? I mean, if there's somebody that's making trouble for me, I'm not going to tell him tomorrow, stop it today. So Ella, the reason was because Paro thought that maybe Moshe Rabbeinu knew the Makkah was going to end today. So therefore he told him, no, yes, you came today, Mocha, let it be tomorrow. So it stopped tomorrow. So we saw tremendous Nisan. And we realized from that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is the controlling force of the world. That's a notion of Zecher Letzias Mitzrayim. There are 50 some odd mitzvahs in the Torah which we celebrate Zecher Letzias Mitzrayim. It's an awful amount. It's a tremendous, and 1/12 of the mitzvahs are Zecher Letzias Mitzrayim. It's so fundamental in Yahadus. But yet, we don't close the circle. What do I mean we don't close the circle? The Ramban writes at the end of Parshas Bo that we should observe the open miracles, and they have to lead us yet to a deeper insight. And that deeper insight is that the entire world that exists around us, day by day, as it unfolds, the sun rises, the sun sets, it rains, the crops grow, everything that takes place, this is also equally miraculous and equally divine, except that the divine hand is more hidden in these occasions than it is in Mitzrayim. And that's why in Kiddush Friday night, in fact, we have both. We have Zecher Letzias Mitzrayim, and from that should further our insight into Zecher L'Maaseh Bereishis, that this Rabbeinu Shel Olam that could so turn the world on end, this is the Rabbeinu Shel Olam that created the world. And we have at the end of the tefillahs on Yom Kippur, the very last tefillah of Yom Kippur is Hashem Hu Elokim, seven times. And I try to wrap my arms around it. What do we mean Hashem Hu Elokim? And I was very confused. I have to tell you, Hashem Yudkei Vovkei is Midas Harachamim, Elokim is Midas Adin. So I was trying to figure the Rachamim is Din, the Din is Rachamim. I just couldn't get it straight. However I tried, then I realized that it's a pasuk. By Elio Hanovi, we have that when he wins in his confrontation with the Nevi Abal, everyone declared Hashem Elokim. And then I realized it's a pasuk. It's a pasuk in Chumash Dvarim, and we say it in Aleinu every day. V'yadata hayom v'ashevos elavavecho ki Hashem hu Elokim v'shamayim imal v'loratz b'toch haseinu. If it's a pasuk, I was in good shape. Why is that? Because somebody's going to say pshat in this pasuk, so I'll finally know what it's supposed to mean. So I found the Sforno. The Sforno was cryptic, and I will explain the Sforno to you. And the Sforno gave me tremendous, tremendous insight, a very useful insight too. Hashem is Yudke Vovke is Ho Yehovah V'Yir, meaning the Rabbeinu Shel Olam transcends time. And every era of the world we experience the Shechinah. Those in the past, those in the present, those that will come in the future. Everyone will experience Shechinah. We will experience Shechinah in different ways. How the Rabbeinu Shalom affects me in my life is different than how he affects you, Chaim, and Shmerel, and Beryl, and Teva, etc., and Tzipora. Everyone has their own life, and the Rabbeinu Shalom's interface with them is different. So the Sforno writes the following, the Hashem that we see, that we experience, day by day, I go, and little things happen in my life, but they remind me of the Rabbeinu Shalom's presence. I meet a person suddenly that I have to meet. Where I have to meet him, when I have to meet him, out of nowhere as he shows up. I succeed with certain things that I couldn't imagine that how I could succeed, and yet somehow everything fell all of a sudden into place. So I see the hand of the Rabbeinu Shalom. So the Sforna writes, when we see that hand of the Rabbeinu Shalom that we experience, who are Elohim? What's Elohim? That's the Elohim of Bracious Bara Elohim, of the Rabbeinu Shalom who created the world. So what we're supposed to, Hashem Elohim means, as we experience Shechina in the ongoing life, as life unfolds, and we see the Rabbeinu Shalom day by day in our life in varied experiences, we have to connect that back in our own mind to Hashem Hu Elohim. That's the Rabbeinu Shalom of Bereishis Bara Elohim. So I realized that the Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim that we say in Kiddush really has a much deeper meaning. It is not only Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Rabbeinu Shalom's presence was felt in Mitzrayim, but it means the Rabbeinu Shalom's presence is felt in an ongoing sense in our own lives. And what I try to do each week, I don't always succeed, but I try before I come to Kiddush Friday night to look at something that happened during that week where I saw the Yad Hashem, where I saw Hashgacha Pratis. And I try to focus on that as I begin for Kiddush Friday night, that Hashem who stood by me, whatever, and this X, Y, and Z happened this week, and I saw His presence, that's the one that I'm talking about in Kiddush Friday night of Zeichel Ma'aseh Bereishis, of the one that created the world. And it's interesting, what does the Pasuk say? Here the Pasuk says, Lamati Saper, Vaozne Bincho, Ben Bincho, Isa Shores Alalti, Mitzrayim, Bas Oisu, Sayas, Samti Vom, Vidatem, Ki Ani Hashem, Yudke Vovke. The Smorno says, the Yudke Vovke means Hashem in the ongoing sense as we experience the Shechina. And this ultimately is what the Seder is supposed to bring us to. That's why we have a very unusual thing. There's one part of the Seder that we think very little about. If you ask people about the Seder which unfolded until Shulchan Aruch, we're big experts on that Seder. When we talk about the second half of the Seder from Birchas Hamazon and on, that's lost. Now, in the second half of the Seder is a very, very fascinating thing that we do, and we need really to contemplate it. The Goyim talked about it already. We have two types of praises of the Rabbeinu Shalom. We have the praises of Psuke de Zimra that we recite each day before the tefillah. We have the praise of Hallel that we recite on special occasions, on Chagim, times of miracles. In the latter half of the Haggadah, we have both. We have the end of the Hallel, and then we have Mizmor Kuf Lamed Vav Hoydel Hashem Ki Tov Ki Le'olam Chasdo, and then we go to Nishmas and Okel B'Satzumos and to Yishtabach, and there's even a question which chasima was supposed to have. The ending bracha of Hallel or the ending bracha of the Psukei de Zimra? Now, why is it the night of Pesach is the celebration of miracles, not the celebration of Psukei de Zimra? So why is it all of a sudden the last part of the Seder we lapse from the Hallel into the Psukei de Zimra? And what the Goyim spell out is the following: that the Hallel talks about miraculous events, Psukei de Zimra talks about nature, as nature unfolds day by day. And ultimately, this is the point that the Ramban makes. We are supposed to go from Pesach, which is the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and connect that with the miracles of everyday life, the silent miracles of everyday life. And that's why there's a whole debate in the Shas, and we actually, why do we have the Mizmor that we choose for this portion of the Haggadah? It's Hoydu Lashem Kitov Mizmor Kuf Lamed Vav. There was a man, the Omer, that said we should start from Kuf Chaf Aleph, from the beginning of the Shira Malas proper. There's a man, the Omer, that says we should do Kuf Lamed Hey, which is the one Halleluka that we say on Shabbos right before Hidul Hashem Kitoiv. And finally, we have the view that we accept that we'd stay only Kuf Lamed Vav. The 15 Shira Malas represent Hashem and nature. And we find this in different deals. Avud Raham says we have 15 references to in. We have 15 references, and Netzach, Dula, Gvura, Tila, Sveretusha, Malchus in the Yishtavach. There were 15 references. They are referencing the 15 Shira Malas. And David HaMelech, when he had a problem in nature that the water was rising too fast from the Tehoim, he recited the Shira Malas to restore the order of nature. Mizmor Kuf Lamed Hey starts with the Rabbeinu Shalom in nature, and then it ends with Yetzias Mitzrayim. Mizmor Kuf Lamed Vav is unique. It has the same structure as Mizmor Kuf Lamed Hey. It begins first with the creation of the world. It then goes to the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But at the very end, there's a pasuk. Noisin lechem l'chol boso ki li'olam chasta. And Shah says that there was a thought that instead of reciting Ashrei, we should have recited this Mizmor Hoidu, because it has Noitzin Lechem L'chol Bosor. This is a perfect fit for thanking the Rabbeinu Shalom day by day for life as it exists. But why did we choose Mizmor Kuf Lamed Vav? Because it starts in nature, it goes to Yetzias Mitzrayim, and then it says, how do you close that cycle? You go back again, Noisin Lechem L'chol Bosor, Kili Odom Chasto, is to go back from Yetzias Mitzrayim to nature, to understanding the Rabbeinu Shalom day by day. So that's what this Chag. This Chag is not only to celebrate the miraculous events, but it's to deepen our insight into what we experience day by day in life. All these so-called natural events of life reflect no less so the Shechina than the open miracles. The Chazon Ish in a letter wrote that what's Teva, nature? He says, nature is the Ratzon HaYeser Masmet Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The most constant will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is nature. Miracles are exceptional moments. The constant will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is nature. And that's what this Chag is about. This Chag, Rabbi Yisai, is to strengthen ourselves in Emunah. And if there's one thing that we need more than anything else today, it's this. It's strengthening ourselves in Emunah. We live in a world which is unmoored from Emunah. The Emunah of our forebears were much more learned than most of our forebears were. For a good number of generations. We have had better opportunities for chinuch that our forebears created for us. Our chinuch far exceeds anything that was known in the last number of generations, probably in the last 100 years. Yet their amuno was a piece of steel. Unshakable, plain, simple yidin, unsophisticated, but their faith in the Rabbeinu Shel Olam was solid as a piece of granite. You couldn't scratch it. And we live in an age where we struggle with Amunah. Amunah is not easy. We don't see Amunah. We don't see the Rabbeinu Shel Olam constantly. It's the world that we live in. It's the times that we live in. And we have to place a lot of emphasis day by day in discovering the Rabbeinu Shel Olam in our own lives. Discovering him in our own lives. Articulating this to our children, to our grandchildren. That a Yid as he lives is to face the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, to confront the Rabbeinu Shel Olam day by day. To see the Rabbeinu Shel Olam in our lives. If we live with an awareness of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, then we'll live a very different life. The entire Torah takes on a different complexion if I understand that I'm walking together with the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. But this, I believe, is the principle of Avodah of our age. Now, I want to begin the halachas. Try to do it in a very systematic fashion. Now, kashering has to begin, obviously, with the stovetop, because until we have hot water, how are we going to kasher anything? So we have to start with the stovetop. Now, there are two possibilities as far as I'm concerned, and that is, do we have gas burners or electric burners? If we have gas burners, then what we need to do, obviously, we have to clean the stovetop. We should clean underneath the stove. We don't have to go crazy to clean what's underneath, but clean out what's underneath. It shouldn't be filthy under there. If there's a little speck of something under there's no food that's going down there that's coming up again that we're going to eat on Pesach. So we don't need to worry about it. You know, it's not our problem. Now, if it's a gas stove, so we need to cover a burner, do one at a time. If you cover the entire top, you probably will succeed in singeing the enamel, so do not cover the entire top of one. Cover one burner, make a little, like a teepee, and put the flame up and leave it on for 15 minutes like that, and it's kosher for Pesach. Then put your teepee to the next, to the next, to the next, and then it's kosher for Pesach. Then you have to, the top of the stove itself, you're going to have to cover. There's no real way to kosher it. Not in our stoves, you know. In commercial stoves is a different story. But in our stoves, there's no real way to kosher ones that we use for domestic use. So cover it with, you know, a heavy layer of aluminum foil, one that's not likely to tear in the middle of the chag and expose what's underneath.
Wait, so you do two layers or one?
Either, it depends. If you're concerned it may tear, do two. I use very, very thick aluminum foil, and I couldn't tear it if I wanted to. It doesn't tear. And you have to cover the drip pan. If you don't have separate drip pans for Pesach, if you have, you know, the ones that hold the grates, then you have to cover them. If you have separate ones for Pesach, you won't have to cover the gas jets. You don't have to do anything with. So now, what else you need to do is you should take the. Now let's go first to electric burners. We'll go try to do this in a whole, in order. Now, for electric burners, are the simplest thing in the world. Just put them up in the highest, and in about 2-3 minutes, they'll turn red. If they don't turn red, just throw a piece of aluminum foil down on them, and they will immediately turn red. And that's way hotter than they have to be kosher for Pesach. And then the rest is the same. If you have separate drip pans, change them. If you don't, cover the drip pans and cover the top. Do not pour water on your oven top. I have to tell you this because I don't like the guy that fixes ovens, and I don't want him to have business. You know, they make a tremendous amount of money. Every time you pour water on your oven top, you probably pop out one of the switches. And they're busy before Pesach running around from one house to the next, you know, repairing the... A little bit of water gets in it. You put on the electric, boom, it pops, it's finished. So do not pour water on the oven top if you have an electric. Not going to help anyhow. It's not going to be kosher in the way that's necessary, but there's no point in doing it. And the knobs are very important. The knobs, you should soak something in some type of cleanser to make sure that there's nothing gooky remaining on them. And it wouldn't be a bad idea to take a kettle and pour hot water on them also before Pesach. And that suffices for the knobs. Now, it's important to remember that we need to cover the splashbacks. In other words, behind the oven, around the sides, and the oven hoods on the top, because hot steam hits there. Whatever we do during the year and why we do it, kashrus in the year is much, much simpler than kashrus on Pesach. Kashrus during the year has two principles that save us constantly. They probably 95% of the shaylos that I get from the kitchen are resolved by one of these two principles. Anything which wasn't used in the last 24 hours cannot make anything else tray for a whole year. And if it's a very small amount of something, so if there are 60 times as much in the kosher, so it's certainly kosher. That 95% of the shaylos that I get are solved by these two principles. The problem is on Pesach, both of these principles lapse. Even if you haven't used it for 6 months, it could still, and you cook chametz, I mean Pesach food in a chametz pot that was used 6 months ago, it's still not kosher for Pesach. And if one tiny speck of chametz falls in, it's also not kosher for Pesach. And therefore, we have very little margin for error in the things that we produce on Pesach. That's, in a way, almost the mile of the foods that are produced before Pesach, because before Pesach, both of these rules are operative. So food that was produced for Pesach before Pesach, if they made a mistake and they violated one of these two rules, they're still kosher for Pesach. But once Pesach strikes, both of these rules lapse. So we have problems. So consequently, we need to be very, very careful. And even while we're allowed to be makel in a whole year, we can't be makel in for Pesach. And if it's necessary to cover the splashbacks and the oven hoods for that reason, so that we don't have an issue with steam going up there and a drop falling back down during the chag. So I think that is taken care of basically everything to do with the stovetop. So if we have any questions about that, I'll take them. Yes.
There's some glass tops on
the stovetop. The glass tops are like this. The truth is, if you want it for Pesach, you're best off not having them. But if you have them, what you need to do is very, very carefully just cover the area which is where the pot sits. And that part is pretty much impervious. That part can absorb a great deal of heat. And put it up as you would any other burner. And then the rest of the areas, you probably have to cover somehow, but leaving the flame areas uncovered. So therefore you won't produce too much heat generated through underneath the foil or whatever you use to cover it, which will cause the glass to pop. So if you want, I'll explain it to you more. I don't want to go into it now further than that, but if it was unclear, I will explain it privately, you know, later on. But as I said, it's not a good idea to have glass tops in the first place. It's just they're hard to work with for Pesach. Yeah.
You don't need to put a black one kosher
stovetop. No, you can put aluminum foil. You're better off not putting a blech, because you can very easily singe the enamel. And commercial stoves are made of steel on the top, and that's one of the good blessings of commercial stoves. They take a great deal of abuse because they're cast iron on the top. And you could, whatever you throw at them, nothing changes about them. Oh, one burner at a time. And make it like a tent so the flame doesn't hit it. If the flame hits it, it's going to pop a hole in it and the heat's going to escape. Now. What? Yes, that makes the grates one. You do not have to put the grates in a self-cleaning oven. Now, I have
to,
you know...
If you put the grates in the self-cleaning oven, then you don't have to do the tent thing?
No, you don't have to do it.
Oh, so you could just borrow someone else's and put it in?
Yeah, assuming that they, sometimes they may dissolve in the self-cleaning. I'm not sure that all of them are made to withstand the heat of the self-cleaning oven. That's a different problem. You know, we have to realize, as I said, what the nature of the halacha is. From the strict letter of the law, if your non-Jewish housekeeper took a pot of chazer with lakshin in it and she cooked it up after this man on the night of Pesach and then she took it off, you could put your chicken soup on there and cook it and it's kosher to Pesach without doing anything. The fact that we bother to do, I don't know, we have chumras, whatever. These chumras we're supposed to have. The Rambam said we should have them. But bottom line, nothing's getting treif on your grate, no matter what you do. You really have to be creative. I do have a way to actually make something treif with a grate. I figured out a way. But you have to work on it. I'm creative. So consequently, we don't need to worry too much. Yeah, we do have to kosherize them, but you know, that's true. But we don't have to go nuts about it, yeah. You have to make sure you leave the vents open.
And then if you run your self-cleaning oven after that,
this question is, what you were really asking is the following, and this vexed me. You know, what to do with the heat which comes out from the vents? Now, the vents sometimes are in the back of the oven. Sometimes they're even vented out through under one of the burners, in the back burners. And I wasn't sure really what to do. I was very vexed by this question. And I am somewhat friendly with Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein. And I met him and I asked him in Cholon in his Kollel. I visit him from time to time when I'm in Eretz Yisrael. And he told me the following. He had a very astute observation, and then it read exactly clear, you know, according to the way Yoredeya works. He said to me the following: if you find moisture on a pot coming up because of that vent, he says, you have a problem. If it just gets hot and there's no moisture, then there's not a problem. And that's basically the way Yoredeya is set up. And by and large, you do not find moisture because of that. They get hot. You don't have moisture coming up. So heat itself is nothing. So that I would not worry about. But that was, I found very good, because he really grabbed it, and he grabbed it in a way which is very, very straightforward and to the point. If you understand Yoredeya, it was exactly to the point. And it clarified a halacha that I've been struggling with practically for a while, what to make of it. And he grabbed it perfectly. Now, once we have a kosher stove, yes?
Is there any reason not to run the self-cleaning cycle before you cover the stovetop?
No. Makes no difference. Yeah, you can do it the other way. You have no problem. You can do the self-cleaning and then put it on. There's no problem whatsoever with that. Now, once you have a kosher stovetop, then you can begin to kasha. Then now we are in sight of... Now we're in sight of starting to kasha, up to the beginning. Now let's talk about sinks. Sinks are one of the harder things we're likely to do.
What?
Well, we'll get to the oven. We're not up to the oven yet. The oven used to be the hardest. The oven for most people is not too hard anymore. The sink. I have a wealthy acquaintance in the office kitchen. He has a little alcove with another stove in there and a few Pesach appliances. Now, if you had the space and the money, it's a very good idea. save a lot of grief, you know. You know, they say you should have a dollar in a dream, you know, for the lottery, you know. My dream is that if I win the lottery, I'm going to buy a house next to my house. It's going to be just a Pesach house, and that's it. You know, I lock the Chometz house, walk into there after Pesach, I'm going to lock the door and walk out, you know. Now, the first thing you need to do on a sink is not to use hot water for 24 hours before you want to kosher it. Now, to make sure that that happens, the best thing to do is to close the check valve for the hot water under the sink so that nobody can mistakenly put the hot water on. Then you only have to worry about someone pouring a kettle into the sink, but at least most of your problem is solved if they can't put on the hot water in that sink. So the first thing is you have to close the hot water and then wait 24 hours. Now, once you did that, so you have the following. Sinks, from my standpoint, they have two types. They have stainless and non-stainless. Stainless sinks, you can pour water on every spot on the sink. You have to do it slowly. It takes me maybe 4 or 5 kettles of water to finish all the spots. I try to get the stream to go as closely as I can up and down at every point directly on the sink. And you have to pour water over the spout as well and splash water on the bottom of the spout. If you have a spritzer and you want to use it for Pesach, dump hot water on the tubing. If the end is plastic and it's replaceable, replace it. If it's not replaceable, just dump hot water on it and it's fine for Pesach. And this assuming all of this, that you don't put hot pots down directly in the sink. If you put hot pots down directly in the sink, then you're in a little bit of catch-22. Which, there is a process, and if you're very, very handy, or your husband is very handy, you could probably pull this off. I don't usually recommend it, because you're working with something very, very hot, and you really have to be adept. You know, some people are smooth, and some people are clumsy. That's just nature. The Rabbanu Shlomo has made us all differently. If you're the smooth type, if you put hot pots in a stove, then you have to, let's say you put hot pots in the bottom of the stove, so then you have to pour hot water, and take something hot, a hot stone or a hot piece of metal, and run it along on top of where the water is so that it makes the water sizzle on the sides and on the bottom of the oven. Particularly the bottom would be the most important part, but I guess on the sides too. So what you do is you take something, a stone or a piece of metal, you heat it in the fire and take it with a big pliers. And then as you pour the hot water, follow afterwards. Because the basic principle is the following. If I take a hot pot and I put it on the bottom of a stove, a hot pot is considered like it's a fire. So consequently, I'm now cooking directly in the sink. If I pour things in, that's one type of thing. If I put a hot pot on it, it's as if I cook directly on the sink itself. So to kosherize it, I have to use the same type of process that I used to make the problem. See, if we just poured water from spaghetti into the sink, so I have to pour water to get it out. If I put a hot pot, it's as if I cooked in the sink itself, so I have to cook again in the sink to resolve the problem. If you're not sure if you put pots in or not, you could be makel. You don't have to worry about using this process of Evan Malubin. Now, if you don't want to use this process, because whatever reason you don't feel it's so safe, you're not comfortable, then just pour the hot water and put some type of liner into the sink, whether heavy-duty aluminum foil, whether one of these commercial sink liners. Now, also what you need to do is you should replace the strainer, which comes on the bottom of the faucet. I don't know where to tell you, it's a little bit awkward this year. The truth of the matter is, I'm thinking of certain things I want, you know, in the absence of town to be able to run into a lot of things for Pesach. What?
They have it paint.
Yeah.
They have them.
Oh, Baruch Hashem, Yenisa. Amazing saving. So consequently, you should replace that little strainer. If you have a stopper on the bottom of the sink, you should replace that for Pesach too. Now, also, you need to pour hot water down the drain area. And also what you should do is pour down either some ammonia or some bleach and let it stay there for 15, 20 minutes down in the drain, and then put on the water and flush it out. Because inside the pipe, when you have a pipe, you know, we tend to think as the pipe is the bottomless pit. Everything goes down there and disappears. But if you open up the pipe of a sink, everything you serve for the last 3 months is in there. Now, after a while, some of it rots, so there's no consequence and it falls apart and eventually flushes. But the more recent things, you'll find the yesterday's elbow macaronis are down there in quite good shape. I'm not saying they're very appealing to want to eat, but they're still elbow macaronis. So you want to put something into them which will really render them inedible. Yes? Whichever way you want. Just make sure you do it.
So it doesn't matter when you do it?
I'm not so concerned when you do it. You're probably better off if you did it first, but I'm not so concerned as long as you do it. Wait 15, 20 minutes, then flush it.
And then with which water?
Cold water is enough. You want to just get it out of the pipes. You don't want it to stay there forever. Yeah.
Regarding cleaning fluids in general, I said in the past that if you spray Fantastic on whatever, it basically kills what's ever there. What happens if you use organic cleaning solutions? Do they work the same way? I mean, do they have the same chocolate?
I tell you the truth. I don't have any experience with them, so I don't know. I presume, let me ask you, so are they, I presume they're highly inedible, even though they're organic. I would imagine so too, I don't know. The other ones I know are toxic. I presume these are toxic in their own way, you know, maybe not toxic in a biological sense, but nothing that you'd be able to eat. Yeah, I would presume they're the same. What? The garbage disposal is all together. Just dump something down there, you know, to render anything inedible. But the garbage disposal is the least of the problems because what are you doing with it on Pesach other than throwing some more garbage into it, you know? But you should do it, yes.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
So you kosher the soap top, but let's say you have a kettle that you need to kosher before or
tovel
before.
Tovel or kosher? Let's get
to
the. You should tell you, I was toying with this up and back. In other words, could I use a kettle which is untovel for koshering? I'm not 100% sure. I thought about this already. My conclusion is I don't think so, because since principally it is intended to be used for food purposes, so before any use is made of it, I would think it had to be toivel. In other words, if you took a kettle and you designated it solely to be used for koshering, then I'm not sure that altogether that you'd have to, that you need to table it at all. That I'm not sure of. Yes?
Does an electric kettle get hot enough that you can use it?
Yes, the electric kettle gets very hot, very hot. In my kitchen, I own three kettles, and I use all of them. For Pesach, I use one, and for kashering, I use three, and one of them is an electric one. Chometz stick?
But if
it's in part of the chometz kitchen, get it out of there.
Let's say I buy a new electric kettle.
Yeah.
Do I have to toilet the entire thing's plastic except for the coil?
Except for the
coil inside. The whole kettle is plastic.
It's better if you toiled it. I'm not sure if you're only going to use it for... If you're using it to cook water, you certainly have to toilet it. Because the main part of it is the coil which cooks the water. So that needs to be... The toilet. It's probably without a brocha in this case, the way they're made. Yeah.
What is the website on things that I guess they call
them? What do you need it for? What do you need it for? That's it, you know?
They use it to
kosher their things. Yeah, I know. It's a nasty thing because if the thing sometimes jumps, and it can jump up on your counter. They do jump because of the hot water. And if it does, it's probably you'll burn a hole in your counter. You will not appreciate it. I succeeded once in life in doing it. Don't worry. Not with a different type of immersion. I'm burning the formica on my kitchen table many, many years ago. You know, I did it already. So if you want to see if you can emulate me, you can try. But I'm not encouraging you. Now, sinks also, around sinks, we need to remember that we have to cover the splashbacks, you know, all around, because food does come in contact with them as we're preparing it. We'll wash the walls around it, but they should be covered. You don't need much. You can cover them with plastic. It's usually not hot that we have in those. It's usually just in the natural preparation of food, so the splashbacks should be covered. The wall in the back. Yeah, the backsplash, whatever.
The cabinets over.
Yeah, I'm not so concerned with that usually because nothing really, I don't think much comes in contact with that usually.
Well,
you don't
do the underneath of the cabinet?
I don't think so. On top of where you cook, yes, but not of where you prepare foods. No. Now, if you have one of those instant hots on your sink, they're relatively easy to kosher. Don't use it for 24 hours. Dump hot water on the outside of the spout and then run some water through from the inside, and it's kosher l'Pesach. Voila. They're very easy to kosher. Now, so that we took it now, so we have now a kosher stove and a kosher sink. If it's not stainless steel, then it's very simple. I would still suggest you pour hot water on it, and then you certainly have to cover it in some fashion. Yes?
Does it matter if you cover the walls first and then kosher the sink, like this, the steam that comes up from...
No, once you have a new... Remember, you're koshering before Pesach, and you haven't used it for 24 hours. So even no matter what you did in that sink, if you put your shmurah matzah in that sink, it wouldn't become treif before Pesach. Now, let's go to what has become much less daunting over the years. The hardest part of kashering used to be the kashering in the oven. That was far and away, years back, was the hardest kashering. Yeah, question?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sink? Yeah, go ahead.
And if with an enamel sink, is it necessary after pouring the hot water on it to line it with foil before putting the insert in?
No, the insert is fine. You can use a foil or insert, one or some type of lining, that's all. Yes?
So you can't turn the hot water off because we're in the apartment building and we just not use the
tape? So I'll put tape or something on it just to make sure that nobody makes a mistake. Because the last thing you want to do is wait 23 hours and then say, Rabbi, somebody just put on the hot water. What do I do now? Yeah.
And so in the seams around the thing,
what,
about how much I clean it, I pour the boiling water.
So then cover it, that's all. Don't do more than that. Use some, I would first cleanse it with some type of cleanser, a liquid, a spray cleanser, and then I'd whatever comes out, and then I would cover it. Okay. So the ovens used to be the most daunting part of kashering. When I came to Kew Garden Hills, that was the hardest thing. Till I came, I only made Pesach once in my life, till I came to this neighborhood. The year I lived in Eretz Yisrael. Other than that, I never made Pesach. Once I moved to Kew Garden Hills, that's it. And the oven was always the hardest job. Nowadays, for most people, the oven is not such a hard job. Because I don't know anyone that buys a new oven today that doesn't buy a self-cleaning. Now, I'm just wondering, I hear a little bit in the world of appliances that some companies are fading out of the self-cleanings because they're very, very harsh on the insides of the kishkes of the oven. But meanwhile, they're around. So as long as they're around, and I presume as long as we want them, there's enough Jews in America that someone's going to supply them for us. Now, the one thing you need to know about self-cleaning is if the oven is very dirty, do not self-clean it. Because if you do, you may wind up with a fire. I mean, I have a friend who didn't realize it was the night before Yom Tov, he put on his self-cleaning. And it was very greasy inside, and flames started to shoot out of the vent. So Baruch Hashem, he's a handy guy with about every gadget in the world in his house. So he grabbed his fire extinguisher and he put it out. And the fire department came and everything was fine. And he just had some soot flying around the kitchen that he unexpectedly had to clean up. So don't put on the oven if it's very dirty. You have a little flecks here and there, that's fine for the self-cleaning. Then put on the self-cleaning for 3 hours. Leave the racks in. And the racks may discolor slightly. Sometimes they get a grayish hue to them, but they'll be fine, quite usable, and they'll be kosher for Pesach. Now, about the door, there's one thing you have to be concerned. I'm not concerned about the door itself, but for varied reasons, you sometimes, when you look at the glass of the door, you see like an oily residue inside. And that a lot of times stems from the fact that in some of the self-cleaning ovens, there may be other causes, in some of the self-cleaning ovens, they're vented through the door itself. The vent is on the bottom of the door, and the fumes vent through the door and come out the top of the door on the way out. That's the way some of them vent. Now, if you look at the window on your self-cleaning oven and it looks like it's greasy inside, then I cover the door for that reason. Not for the koshering of the door, but I'm concerned that I can't really kosher the glass part. And there is something inside there, there's material inside there. And to start to take the oven apart is a no-win situation. So I cover it with heavy-duty aluminum foil for that reason in my house, and that's the end of that problem.
Just the window part,
yeah. Now, if you have a non-self-cleaning oven, that's where you have work to do. First, you have to clean it. That's number one. And don't put your head inside the oven while you're cleaning it. It is too dangerous to do that. Khalilah, you could hurt your eye or something could drip down. And it's worth investing a few dollars in a pair of goggles if you're going to do such a job. So in case something splashes, caustic, it's not going to go into your eyes, chas v'shalom. Now, once it's clean, put it on the highest heat for an hour and a half. Then you have to cover the inside, which is a real difficult job. I've done it many times, but it's a difficult job. You need heavy-duty foil. And the first thing you have to do is line the three walls that are contiguous in a U-shape with one long piece that's long enough to go from the sides around the back. You have to press very gently with a track saw so you'll be able to get your racks back in. And then once you have that, you can put a piece on the bottom and you can put a piece on the top because it'll stay on top of that U and you can line the door. But it's a job. This is the biggest job for Pesach, without any doubt, in terms of koshering in the kitchen.
Does it have to be one piece?
No, it doesn't. It just practically, it works best if it is. That's all, you know. I usually used to make one big U all the way around because it just stays in place best that way. You know, you don't have to. Now,
you have to
the door, you also cover from the inside. Yes. Now you may have sometimes left a little bit. You may have a wire from the thermostat. I wouldn't worry about that.
What about like the bottom part for the fire?
Go under it. Pick it up. Or whatever. You leave. We close whatever you can. You know, or you may have to leave some holes to let the fire go through. You could do that. Now, the racks you should take and get one of your friends to put them in their self-cleaning for you. For 3 hours. Now, my advice to you is once you get your racks kosher to Pesach, put them in your oven once and don't pull them out. Because you have to gently slide them over the foil. And if you're going to go in and out with them, you're going to tear the foil aside and you're going to have to redo the job in the middle of the yontif, which you're not looking to do. So when I had that type of stove, you press very gently with your hand so that the foil is very flat against the tracks. And you very carefully put in the oven rack so you don't tear it, and once they're in, you leave it there. You don't move them at all on Yom Tov. Now, if you have a broiler area, you had the rack, the pans in the broiler, you should put into the self-cleaning, put on the broiler for an hour, and it's when it's kosher LePesach as is. Nothing more is necessary in the broiler than that. Okay. No, you don't need to worry about the gasket. Clean, you always clean. You'll make sure that it's clean around all gaskets. Always look, you know. If it comes off, it's best to take it off. The ones that the ovens that are coming, because it's easiest to clean in the crevices if you can get the door off.
So what is the clear to do for the actual door?
For the actual, you wash it clean and that's it. And then you're going to wind up.
If there's stuff stuck there.
So yeah, after the self cleaning, so you'll cover it and that's all. After two times self-cleaning, there's going to be nothing edible that's left there. That's for sure. Now, you may have some burned spots. So if you're not comfortable, if it's not clean, so cover it. That's all. If you don't intend to use it, I think it's enough just to put it on for an hour before. Only that's enough. But
what if you don't intend to use your oven? Do you have to?
Yeah, if you don't intend to use your oven, just put some type of siman, a piece of masking tape, or blue painter's tape that you're not going to use it, and shalom al Yisrael. You know. Yeah.
How many hours do you have to stop
the oven?
3 hours.
Yeah. Once, yes. Yeah.
When you turn on the oven, do you need to have a pan inside to...
No, you're the monofshach. I cheshbon this out. There is a chumrah during the year that if you kasher a regular oven to put a pan of water. But that's assuming that you're not covering the walls. So on a self-cleaning, it's kosher. And since on the non-self-cleaning, cover the walls, there's no need for the steam pot. That's what I cheshboned out today. Okay.
Can you do that and not cover your walls?
No. Nice try. Listen, if you move to Lakewood, maybe you could follow her behind him and he lets you at least do that before Pesach. Don't worry about it. It's fine. You were Heinemann signed off on it also. Nice man. I met him at a chasana last night. A very, very pleasant person. Brilliant person, but a pleasant person. Now let's go on to countertops. Now, countertops, from my standpoint, are also divided in two categories. There's real stone, whether marble in Eretz Yisrael or granite here, but a real piece of stone, natural. So, assuming that you don't put hot pots directly on it. Now, most people don't like to put hot pots directly on it. They're afraid they're going to crack it. So most people do not put hot pots directly on their granite or on their marble. So all you have to do is pour hot water over it, and it's kosher, and you don't need to cover it for Pesach at all. If you put hot pots on it, then you're going to have to cover it. There's no, I can't help you. I don't think you want to be using an Evan Malubin on such, you know. I don't think it's going to do any good for the stone. Now, if you have formica or compound stone or Corian, sometimes you have a compound granite, which basically is they take granite and they grind it up and then they put it back together again. That, it's non-natural form, you can't really kosher it for Pesach. So it's preferable if you dump water on it, there are sphakas, and then cover it. But if you want to just cover it well, that's also fine.
Is that true for the real granite with hot pots also? Is it okay to have to pour the water?
You don't have to. You want to cover it, you can cover it, and that's all. Yeah, correct. Now again, around the sinks, you have to cover the splashbacks behind the sinks. And that's basically the story. It's not the hardest of jobs. It's a little time consuming, but not the hardest of jobs. Yeah.
Let's say you don't want to pour water all over your kitchen on your granite tops.
Cover them.
So can you just clean it and cover it?
Clean it and cover it, and that's all fine. Yeah. If that suits your taste best, do it.
You don't have to pour that. If you have to pour that, you don't have to pour the hot water. You just clean
if you
it and
if you clean it and cover it well, you don't need to pour the hot water. Correct. Yes.
Just two quick questions. Number one, going back to the oven a minute, if you have a non-self-clean, you turn it on for an hour and a half.
Yes.
Do you use the Costa cleaner?
Yes.
Because it doesn't have to be 3 hours. Okay, and with the countertop, you talked about covering the backsplash behind the sink. Does that mean the rest of the county you don't need to cover the backsplash?
No, all over. Around the whole counties, you cover the backsplash. No, around everything. Not only with how I talked about the counties. Around everything around the counties. The counters, the sinks.
Can you cover something
clear? Yeah, in my house we do. We take clear plastic tablecloth and that's what we cover it with. We cover all the splashbacks all around. And together with plastic. What? That's what we cover it with in my house. What? And often it's not like that, it doesn't tear. Whatever, decent, you know. It's what we use in my house.
It's not really like anything's touching, just that
you don't want anything to splash on there, whatever. But splash is this way, it's covered. No. Tables are not a big deal. You just have to be sure that they're clean. If you have a formica table, scrub it well. If it's a table which is expandable, open it up and clean in the crack. Because if you use it uncovered, I guarantee you that by the end of the year, inside the crack, there's a lot to clean out. So open it and clean it out. And then after that, you should cover it well. Now the covering should be enough that heat does not go through. So in case something spills there's going to be no concern of heat drawing something up from underneath.
If you never open your table, then you don't have to.
You should still check. That's especially when you have to clean it because you don't open it. Because when you eat there, things fall into the crack and stay in there. So if you open it up, you might clean it out during the year. If you don't open it up, you can have a good pile of chametz inside there. So that's not a problem. You don't have to clean it. There's nothing to clean. Just cover over the... In my house, there's nothing to clean on the table in the dining room. We cover over... I put something down for Pesach on top of the... what do you call it? The table pads, yeah. And that's it. Finished. I have, you know... Yeah. What do I use to cover it? I got those plastic, those hard plastic things they have in town. Or I used to use cardboards, but the hard plastics are better. I like them better. You know, and they last very well. We will cut the size. We put them away in the garage from year to year. And then the next year, we don't have to cut them anymore. They're already pre-made to size. So they fit exactly where they're supposed to fit. What can I tell you? Refrigerators... All you have to do to kosherize the refrigerator is to wash it well, and do wash the top of the door too. It's surprising how much actually winds up on top of the door, on top of the gasket on the door. Wash that off. It's not necessary to cover the shelves inside. In fact, the fridge operates better if you don't cover the shelves. That's why I make wire racks to let the, in most fridges, to let the cool air circulate properly. If you put hot pots directly in, then you should cover it. Yeah.
What if you had a previous owner?
Don't worry about it. This is not one of these halachas. This is a chumrah of the Ramah, which is not ma'akev. So misofik, you don't have to worry about it. You should take it out.
You have to
destroy it. If you can, you should take it out. It's not right to leave it there for Pesach. Yes. Yeah. Now, microwaves, again, microwaves are in two types. If you have a plastic inside, just put it away for yontif if you're not koshering it. If it's a metal inside, you can kosher it by cleaning it well, getting rid of the turntable. The turntable is a glass, and glass cannot be koshered for Pesach. And pour a little bit of water on the floor, put a cup of water inside, and then put it on for about 10 minutes until you feel the walls hot from the steam, and it's kosher for Pesach. That's what you need to do in a microwave. About 10 minutes it takes, and then you'll feel, put your hand on the walls inside, you should feel it hot from the steam. And that, now if you have a convection microwave that you use in the convection, so put it on the convection for a while, or whatever you would might normally use it for, with the water inside, and that'll also become kosher. Now, dishwashers, if they're plastic insides and plastic racks, don't bother for Pesach. You can't really clean them. If you have new racks for Pesach and you have a stainless steel one, I'll talk to you privately. I don't want to get into it. I don't think it's too relevant because most people don't have replacement racks. We use it for storage in my house. We put a lot of chobot sticker things in there, and we tape it closed. No, we don't keep Pesach things.
You mean just drying rack? If
you washed it well, you could use it as a drying rack for cold things, yes.
When you wash well,
cleanse, yeah. And know that it's absolutely clean inside, you could use it. Now, you know, it's, one second, koshering, you know, I'm not a big fan of koshering, in terms of koshering kalim. The kalim are just, most kalim are just not made in a way that's easy to kosher. You know, you got a knife, which is a fork or something, which got tray for something, that's easy enough to kosher. Koshering pots and pans, most of them, in the home, main ones made for home use, does not work well for Pesach, because they all have the curved lips. And the curved lips is a place that you can't really clean inside. And stuff gets in them when you soak them, and who knows if you ever get it out. So for a whole year, because of the reasons that I mentioned to you, that tiny bits don't make treif. And after 24 hours, and you soaked it, so all of those things together will allow us to, but for, the commercial is different. The commercial does not have these fancy curved lips. Commercials have big open areas underneath the tops. But in the home ones, it's just not worthwhile. Things are not all that expensive, you know, in today's world for most people, that we need to be bothered with kosher. It's just something that's, leave it as a historical relic of the past. You know, kashering, whatever I believe in kashering for. You want to kasher the beches for Pesach, you know, that's about where it's at. Those are a chumrah only to kasher them, it's not really mitzaradin. No, what's the concern? That maybe I wash them with chumrah the conditions, and maybe because of that they have to be kasher. Okay, so those who can throw in the boiling water and kasher. Other than that, I am not a very, very big fan of kasher. Okay, now, I think I discussed all that I want to discuss. If you have any questions, I'll be more than there, Pnina.
Can you repeat what you said about the microwave and the convection oven?
Yeah, if you have a microwave, if it's a regular microwave and it's stainless inside, wash it well, take the turntable out and get rid of it for Pesach. I take the rack out and get rid of that so I don't have to clean it, all the crevices. Wash it clean. Put a cup of water inside, pour water on the bottom so there's water even where the cup is standing, and put it on for about 10 minutes, and the steam heat, you'll feel the walls are hot from the steam. And it's kosher. It happened to be Rav Moshe Elephant had an idea which is not a bad idea at all. You know, he wanted to argue in favor that on Pesach itself, not what you prepare on Pesach in the microwave, the dikasher, there would be benefit to covering whatever you put into the microwave. I would understand that too. But as I said, as a chumrah, it's a good chumrah. Now, if it's a convection microwave, then however you use it during the year, put the water inside and then put on the convection however long you would, you know, you do it normally. Or a half an hour, whatever you use the microwave. I don't know how long you use it. I don't use mine in that fashion.
It's an oven.
What?
It's an oven, like 20, 30
minutes convection oven. Yeah, it's an oven. If it's an oven, then you put for, if it's a real oven, then you put for an hour and a half. That's all. Yeah.
What is the halacha in using the silver Amazing Savings plastic batters? Because you're supposed to use something that's not disposable for the...
Listen, it's the Sforum quoted to Maril, I believe, was very particular to use very fancy things for the Seder. And constantly throwaways are not very fancy. Now, I'm not getting involved in the question. If, you know, when we deal with the question of simchas yontif, and some people want to use throwaways so that they shouldn't have the cleanup problems, you know, I can be sympathetic. I personally don't conduct myself that way, but I'm not unsympathetic to those that want to go in that direction.
I'm saying in my matzav, you would advise me to use them, correct?
What else are you going to do?
I don't have a choice, that's what I'm asking.
Okay, when you don't have a choice, then there's little question in life. You know, there are things which are obligatory. What's obligatory, when we don't have any terutzim of choice or no choice. Things which are not absolutely obligatory, then choice plays, circumstances play a very big role in life. Yeah.
I'm going back to the kettle. So you have a brand new kettle, you double it. And now you have to wash it, but you don't have to
fill it up. You just rinse it out with cold water, come on. Okay. And you're boiling it anyhow. What's going to happen if you didn't? Remember, you're boiling it now. Okay. Yeah.
A counter called water filter, do you have to buy a new one?
You should not, if whatever lies around with chametz the whole year should not be used on Pesach. Simple rule, which includes baby bottles, pacifiers, all of that stuff. Found a few new ones for Pesach.
Linda. As far as pouring boiling water on your counters, does it matter if it's before or after you have to?
No, doesn't make a difference. Once you didn't use them for 24 hours, it makes no difference. Nothing's going to happen before Yom Tov. As long as you haven't used it for 24 hours, before Yom Tov, you're safe. Nothing can go wrong. What? No, but you're going to tape and close up. You can leave whatever you want in there. You want to put challah inside, it's also fine. That's your thing, you know?
For the sink, you know those easy filters. So you know, I have a new one from Mesa. But last year, one of the, I don't know what it's called, this little rubber thing from the easy filter, it fell in the sink. I'm not sure, like when I was cleaning up after Mesa, and then I found it, but I just washed it off and put bleach on it. Is that okay?
For what?
To put it back into my filter.
It's not, if it fell in the sink, it's not a problem.
It was the rubber, you know that rubber?
Yeah, it's not a problem.
If you're just closing off, let's say, your kitchen completely or any room in your house, do you have to put anything away?
No, nothing at all. Just close it off, but you have to put some simon, like a piece of blue painter's tape or something, to stay out of there. You don't have to do anything at all. Someone, I made somebody happy tonight. Okay. What I did with toys, I'll tell you the best things with toys. Toys that don't get destroyed by water, the best thing to do, the easiest thing to do, is fill up the bathtub with some water and some ammonia, throw them all in the bathtub, let them soak overnight, rinse them off in the morning, and l'chaim al-shalom, goodbye, finished, end of problem. That's what we did when I had little kids, that was the simplest way to deal with it.
Are you conscious, not a problem?
No, well, let's say, listen, you don't know what you have. You could have other gook on there that's maybe more significant. If you want to, you may just find it simpler just to soak the whole thing and be done with it without looking. Whatever you find easier. Listen, I'm not the arbiter of what's easier.
In some years, the Rav said, like especially with things like Legos, just buy new ones. Your kid won't mind.
Yeah, listen, if you're that concerned, just put them away for Pesach. If it really gets. Now, you did point out, I do want to go back to this. There's a psak, I discussed this Friday night in shul, but the women are not in shul Friday night, so this is a good forum to take it up. We are not looking for crumbs in Bedikas Chametz. Clearly, okay? That's what Rav Moshe Feinstein paskin, the Chofetz Chaim, and the Mishnah Berurah paskin that way. And consequently, we are not concerned with tiny, tiny crumbs. It has to be large enough that it's reasonable that a person would pick it up and want to eat it. It doesn't have to be a kezias, but a piece that's big enough that it would tempt a person to eat it. If it's smaller than that, you don't need to worry about it. Whatever it is, whatever way. Listen, if it works for you, it works. You know, different people have different anxiety levels. I just have to deal with all of them. Different people have different anxiety levels. That I learned in life, there's nothing I could do about that. Yeah.
A certain rabbi that comes to my Sunday morning shiur said that she had read that there are kosher Pesach K cups this year, and that you can kashi your curd for Pesach by running hot water.
The curd. I'm not interested in getting involved in kosher and the Keurig. It could be trickier than they imagine. Whatever I know, whatever, there are those that say you can do it, you tuck the cup, comes out, kosher it. I'm not so convinced that that's the whole answer to the problem yet. So I don't want to, I'm not going to be a naysayer, but I'm not supporting it either. Yeah. What? A little louder, I don't hear you.
My grandmother wants to get this stone china that was her mother's over 30 years ago.
Yes.
She wants to send away to Kasha.
For Pesach, no way in the world.
No way.
Nothing you can do for Pesach. Yes.
I have a hot water urn built up here. It's on the counter all year long.
Yeah.
The inside is obviously boiling hot constantly. But the outside is like with the hummus all year.
Home use, it's best to have another one. That's all. There are in commercial uses, I would have other answers for you, but for a home use, I would use a different one. I would not use the same one. Okay, so I think we took care of all the problems that we need to. Now, in medicines in general, those that are solid pills are very little problem for Pesach. And those people that have serious conditions that you're taking medicine for, you should certainly go on taking it. For non-serious conditions, which involve chewables and liquids, that's where the shilas begin, where you need to do some investigation if the medicines are suitable for Pesach. But anything that's for a serious medical condition, or anything that comes in solids, is b'chlal not a problem for Pesach. But vitamins, and if you don't need them for Pesach, I put them away, because there is a lot of chametz in vitamins, it happens to be. Hard capsules are included. Yes. Yeah.
What about things like shampoo, shampoo?
Listen, as I said, mitzaradin, they're all mutter. You know, what you want to be machmer, chumras, as I said, chumras and Pesach are endless. And there's reason for the chumras. I'm not, I understand that for well. But we want to know what's mitzara din. Mitzara din, they're all mutter. Yes?
Baby formula?
Baby formula, kidneys, and you should wash it in the bathroom sink, not in the kitchen, and get new bottles for Pesach. I don't know about them. You'd have to know that they're kosher for Pesach because the cupcake holders, I believe, do have something as a release agent in them from what I know. So I presume, I did not research the matter, so you can call one of the national kosher agencies and ask them what the status is.
Is there anything else that has that besides
paper? You have the parchment, some of the parchment papers also you'd want to know. I did not research them in terms of Pesach. I don't know the answer to the question, but parchment papers do have some type of release agents, which is the way that they work. That's why they don't cause things to stick in the first place. Yeah.
Does it have to be 24 hours?
No, enough to get it clean, that you know it's clean. You only need 24 hours. Rabbi Isai, may Rabbi Shalom grant that we have a wonderful Yom Tov.
I don't know if they're out. They're either on top of the bima, which you can see they're not. Are we being recorded? Even better. I don't believe they're out yet.